Welcome, everybody. We're going to begin our Orange County Human Relations Commission meeting. Glad to see everybody is here. I hope everybody had a good month thus far. Ramadan Mubarak.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. A lot of iftars happening over the next month and
feasting.
Yes. Should be an easy fast during the day. So let us begin with our monthly summary of commission activities. And Dr. Namath, if you would please just do a quick review for us.
One thing that was very exciting that happened at UCI, and I believe I sent Norma or Joyce the information, was the director of the Anti- Defamation League came and spoke at UCI, and it was just May 6th, so just recently. And it was just an amazing opportunity to hear his perspectives and to have the engagement of the audience that related to freedom of speech and at the same time educating all of us on symbols and just the activities that have happened over the last couple of years. And so it was very interesting discussion.
Thank you. Thank you. Norma, anything else you want to just highlight over the last month?
Just as an FYI, Don Hahn used to be on the California Association of Human Relations Organization Board, and I've taken over that role. And I'll try to keep everybody apprised on any activity, especially with the legislation law. Just recently, there was a letter of endorsement from the Cairo Board to add homelessness as a protected class under the hate crime law. Now, there's been a lot of back and forth in terms of that, and it hasn't been voted on yet. But, you know, as soon as I hear more information, I'd like to share that with you.
That sounds like a fascinating debate. Maybe our district attorney will weigh in as well. Terrific. So opportunity for members of the public to address the commission. Are there any?
I have not received any requests.
No. Okay.
Okay. So item number three, my award goodwill recognition to Dr. Kimberly Bedell.
Unfortunately, we're going to have to postpone this till next month. Sadly, Dr. Carrie Reynolds had another death in her family. It's like the third one in as many months. Do you have a card here for us to sign? Okay, so let's do that. This is, and I'd like the minutes to reflect all the hard work that Dr. Reynolds has spent on this program, and today was the rollout of our first awardee, and so we'll just postpone it for a month, and on behalf of the commission, send her our condolences, of course.
Okay. Item number four is District Attorney's Office, Hate Crimes in OC.
Great. I'd like to introduce Jake Jundle to come forward. I just want to begin by saying our District Attorney, Todd Spitzer, has been a friend of OC Human Relations Commission for a long time, and he is supportive of the work we do, and particularly now in his new position from supervisor to district attorney, is an advocate in creating a society in which hate crime is reduced to the very lowest possible number, and will do everything in his power to ensure that Orange County is a place of tolerance and kindness, a place where you can't get away with illegal activity. And I'm just really glad that we have a friend in that office who supports the work that this commission does. So thank you. And your presence here is representative of that you would take time out of your busy day to address us. And I'm sure you have a presentation, but we would love to hear the process by how this all takes place and everything else you'd like to talk about. So welcome, Jake. Glad you're here.
Great. Thank you. Commissioners, thank you. My name is Jake Jondal. I'm a deputy district attorney in the Orange County DA's office. I'm assigned to the Special Prosecutions Unit, and one of the main things that we handle in that unit is the prosecution of hate crimes, and we're also looking, as I'll discuss in a little bit, to expand training of deputies in our office, law enforcement, and additional community outreach as it relates to hate crimes. So as you're all well aware, hate crime is essentially a bias-motivated crime. That's the way that we think about it. And we look at our list of factors that are presented in 422.55 and 56. A lot of the main ones that we end up seeing in these, in our filings, are going to be race-based and religion-based. The other ones, not so much, but we do see them and we are aware of them. As I'm sure the commissioners are aware, 422.55 lists gender as a protected class or a protected characteristic. And it's important to note that gender also includes an individual's not only their sex, but their gender identity and their gender expression. That's something that we have talked about, trying to target that community more, to be aware of if they're targeted for that specific reason, that they should report that as a crime. There's a number of hate crime charges that can be filed. I've listed those in the documents that I've presented to the commission. And essentially, we're looking for someone who's acting in whole or in part because of actual or perceived characteristics of the victim. So whether it's an actual characteristic, the person is African American and they are targeted by a white supremacist who goes after an African American, or a defendant thinks someone is of African American heritage and targets them because they think that we want to punish them for what they're thinking and the motivation behind their crime. And it also covers association with those groups, which is important as well. So if someone is a friend of the Jewish community, the Muslim community, the African American community, and they're targeted for that support or that association, they can be punished as well. There's a number of what I would characterize as non-traditional hate crimes that we try to be cognizant of in my unit and in our trainings. And while they may not always be hate-related, or they will be hate-related, they may not qualify as a hate crime. Those include disturbing religious meetings, vandalism of religious building or a house of worship, terrorizing by symbol, and there are specific provisions for hanging a noose, placing a sign or mark, and a swastika is specifically stated in the code section, and burning or desecrating a cross or other religious symbol, which we'd all be familiar with from the KKK.
Jake, can I ask a question?
Sure.
And that's on private property, right? If those expressions take place on public property because there's no intended victim, it's a hate incident but not a hate crime.
That's correct.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
And something,
and not prosecutable in any way, shape, or form?
Other than potentially for arson, if someone's burning something out in public, then that could be arson, vandalism, those types of things. And that's an important distinction, that there are hate incidents and there's hate crimes. There are certain things that, you know, while they may be deplorable, someone, for instance, a case we have had is someone goes and spray paints a swastika just on a random building. We cannot identify a target of that conduct. We can't identify a victim who was associated with the property that was spray painted or vandalized to charge a hate crime. Now, we can see that most likely that person was motivated by hate, sympathies for Nazi ideology, possibly anti-Semitic motivations as well. But we have to be able to identify that piece of property with a protected class, someone who's either Jewish heritage, Jewish religion, those types of things. So as an example, the spray painting was done of a swastika just at a normal public junior high school. There was no indication that it was associated with a Jewish school. Jewish students hung out in that particular area. And so we were left with simply charging vandalism in that case. So that would be an example of a hate incident versus a hate crime. Obviously, if someone went to a synagogue and spray painted a swastika on the door or on the side, that's a much easier case for us. They have a very difficult time saying that was not motivated by hate or directed at a member of that class. A lot of times, too, we look for arson crimes being hate crimes. Luckily, that does not happen that much because obviously arson is a dangerous crime that can cause serious damage. But that's something that we look for, people trying to start fires at houses of worship or other areas such as that. There's a number of different ways that we can charge these crimes. Some of these crimes, unfortunately, just based on the way the statutes are written, are only misdemeanor crimes. They're not felonies. Those are interference with civil rights by force, by threat, or by destruction of property. In particular, in destruction of property, if the amount of property damage is not over $400, then we cannot charge a felony. We are stuck with a misdemeanor. And I apologize, $950. So we're stuck with a misdemeanor simply for that reason. It doesn't mean that we don't think it's serious conduct, that it may not be deserving of felony conduct, but that's where we're left. In terms of our office, and I'm happy to take questions at any point during this as they come up, District Attorney Spitzer has made it a point for myself and currently the other hate crime prosecutor in our unit to increase our trainings both within the office and outside of the office. And what we have done to effectuate that is go out to what are known as the branch courts, which are the outlying courts in Fullerton, Westminster, Juvenile Court, Santa Ana, and Newport Beach, to give trainings to our deputy district attorneys on what a hate crime is, how to identify a hate crime, and what to do as far as the proper procedures within our office to make sure that hate crimes get handled appropriately. He's been very clear that he doesn't want any hate crimes essentially falling through the cracks or not being dealt with appropriately. So every hate crime that occurs in Orange County, whether it could be charged as a hate crime, whether it has some hate incident undertones to it, should come to our unit, to myself and the other hate crime prosecutor. Additionally, we are in the process of putting together a training video, both for internally at the DA's office, as well as for police agencies that we can distribute through our training network to make sure that police officers, police agencies can investigate, ask the right questions, and make sure we're prosecuting all hate crimes that occur. And the process of a hate crime as it occurs in our office is, as you're well aware, I'm sure, a crime is initiated by the investigating agency in probably 99% of cases. The police officer goes out and takes a report, for example, an assault and battery. And the victim may be a person of color that says a person used a racial epithet towards me. From there, it will go up the chain of command in the police agency, goes to the detective bureau for follow-up investigation if that's needed, and then it comes to our office. If an officer or detective thinks that it is a hate crime and they're suggesting the filing of hate crime charges, that will automatically be routed to my unit, the Special Prosecutions Unit, to then review for filing, determine what charges, if any, are appropriate, make that determination, and then take the case all the way through up and until trial. Another way that it can happen is an officer may be new, may not be aware of hate crime charges, may think they don't apply in this particular case. They just send a case in as a regular assault and battery. It goes to one of those outlying courts just to be dealt with normally. A deputy DA there will look at it, say, you know what, I see some bias motivation in this crime. I think special prosecution should look at it. We developed a protocol that those deputies then send it to our unit. We take a look at it and then make our decision from there. In terms of numbers, and we will be providing these, I think, later in the year as part of our annual report. Hate crimes from 2017, it was 8 cases this year, or in 2018, the most recent number that we have is there were 15 hate crime cases that were either, that were essentially initiated and filed as hate crime charges. We get a number of cases that, as I've said, for one reason or the other, we cannot prosecute as a hate crime. But there's certainly an increase that we've seen over the last year. Some of the challenges that we have in prosecuting hate crimes, one of the main ones is it's a specific intent crime. So we have to deal with defenses of voluntary intoxication, issues of mental illness, which we do see in a fair number of these hate crime cases. And those are things that can work in favor of the defendant as we try to prosecute these cases. The other main issue that we have is we look in a lot of cases and we have an issue finding an identifiable victim. For example, what I said with the swastika on the side of the junior high school, that was a case that we had and was filed only as a misdemeanor vandalism. We have to be able to identify based on the statute a victim with those protected characteristics or an association with that group, and that's a major issue that we have. And then finally, another major one we have is either a lack of cooperation or an unwillingness to cooperate by members of some of these protected classes, I think a major one is either gender identity or sexual orientation that may not, for whatever reason, be as open with the police as they should be and say, hey, the guy came up to me because I was walking with my boyfriend or my girlfriend and attacked me for that reason. A lot of times that's something that comes up later when you talk to a victim. That comes out, they maybe weren't comfortable with the police officer. Maybe they were out in a public setting and they didn't want to expose themselves to whatever else may have victimized them at that point. So that's something that we are looking to change, I guess, the climate that people of all protected classes feel comfortable telling the police, hey, this is the reason I think I was attacked and we can handle it appropriately.
Excuse me, I had a quick question. Yeah. You were talking about the $400 limit for the misdemeanor vandalism, right? So, but if they have a history or they belong to a extreme group that relates to that, does that have any factor in making it a felony or you know, they have a prior misdemeanor in the same type of work?
Right. Unfortunately,
or field, I guess.
Right. Unfortunately, their record does not make an impact on that particular code section because it's simply looking how much was the damage of caused to the property. And that's all we're looking at in that case. You bring up extremist groups. If, and it's probably a little more complicated than there's enough time to explain here, but there are gang enhancements and gang crimes that can be charged. If the group, the extremist group, has enough predicate acts, has established themselves as a gang. So that could take something that maybe was $100 of damage, which would be a misdemeanor. And if it's an established, verified gang, then that could turn it into a felony. There is a felony enhancement that we could take any felony, whether it's a assault with a deadly weapon, it's a criminal threat, that we can add on, which is a 422.75, and increase the punishment by 1, 2, or 3 years for felonies, and that's regardless of the underlying conduct as long as we think it's a hate crime. And then I guess in as a final statement, one issue that we do have too is when we take these cases before judges have essentially the ultimate say in these cases, and we certainly respect their discretion. They may view cases differently than we do, differently than the police do, differently than the victims. And many of these cases that we can file as felonies, a judge can reduce to a misdemeanor through the penal code, and then we're left with a misdemeanor that may not be a hate crime anymore. There are certain crimes that are only a hate crime as a felony with a felony enhancement. If a judge says, I'm going to make this a misdemeanor because of a defendant's limited record, mental health issues, any other issue, the hate crime enhancement falls off and we're left with a simple assault and battery, for instance. So we're very cognizant of that as well. And we, when we think there's a hate crime, we try to charge, not to overcharge it, but to charge everything that's supported by the facts and by the law to make sure that if a judge exercises that discretion, we can still end up with a misdemeanor hate crime that will be properly reflected on their criminal record, on their rap sheet, so that essentially he's held accountable for what he did. And with that, are there any other questions? Yes.
I'd like to know, you mentioned the case of someone with mental illness and the implications of what happened. Is there any follow-through with to help that individual so that it doesn't happen again in terms of referrals or just to deal with the mental illness aspect, for example?
Sure. There's certainly a few things that we don't deal with necessarily as the district attorney's office. That's mostly on the defense side. But there are certainly the community courts that are set up. There's mental health court. There's homeless court, veterans court. So there's a number of things that can, I guess, get them linked up with services to try to prevent it. Unfortunately, I don't think that's always extremely successful. There's also mental health diversion, which is PC 1001.36, which is new this year or in 2018. And that's another way that they can get help and be put into a two-year treatment plan. And yeah, essentially, those are the options available.
So you have to really be a hateful person to be convicted of a hate crime, if I understand correctly. The officer has to identify it, then his sergeant, then the detective, maybe it goes all the way up to the chief, depending on how serious the case is. Then it starts back at the bottom of the district attorney's office, works its way up, then it goes to a judge. I mean, there are good checks and balances if you're going to be convicted of a hate crime. Is that a fair statement to make?
I think in one way it's a fair statement. Mm-hmm. It's with all crimes. You know, sometimes, a lot of times you have either a hunch or you look at a case and you say, hey, I know this guy had an accomplice.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way he did this by himself. I know it 100%. If there's no evidence, if there's no second set of fingerprints, if the defendant doesn't give a statement, hey, my friend was helping me out, then we're stuck with one guy for a crime that we know two or three or four were implicated mm-hmm. in. And sometimes criminals are smart. You know, they may be smart enough to say, oh, I didn't do this for a hate reason. That guy looked at me funny. He disrespected me. And we may say, hey, this person was whatever protected class. It was a parent. We think that's why they did it. But we have to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt in court. And so we're left with some of those unfortunate incidents.
Counselor, how of the 15 cases that were prosecuted last year, how many does that represent that came across your desk?
In terms of the, there's a few different numbers there. We keep track of stats as required for cases where either we initiate and file a hate crime or it is sent to us as a hate crime by the agencies. So that number, if I recall correctly, was 32, and we filed 15 of those. Some were simply refused or rejected outright for various lacks of proof. There were certain cases where it appeared, based on all the evidence, that the victims were essentially fabricating the events, so that knocked some of them out. And then the rest are kind of what I described before, where they're hate incidents versus hate crimes. And we prefer the police to look at them and be err on the side of caution and say, hey, look at this for hate crime. There's less chance that we're going to miss a hate crime if that happens. There's a greater number, and I forget what the number is, that were referred to us by other deputy district attorneys, where maybe they noticed a racial epithet was used, or whatever the case is. That was a much bigger number. Again, we're casting a wide net to make sure that the ones that are in fact hate crimes, we're not missing them, they're not falling through the cracks. And sometimes, I'll leave it at that.
Chief?
Thank you. I think more of just a comment than a question. Just want to say thanks for being here today, and thanks to the commitment on the part of the DA's office to take so serious and investigate these crimes. And if I could just talk a minute about the relationship that law enforcement, and I feel confident speaking on behalf of Orange County law enforcement, that we have with the DA's office in presenting these cases to you. And I feel comfortable saying that now more than ever, law enforcement is more highly trained and much, much more sensitive to these kinds of cases that we all know shock the conscious. And having the training to more readily identify things that are hate incidents, hate crimes, properly investigate them, document them. And we've been talking a lot about hate incidents. Even with hate incidents, most departments have policies that mandate documentation of hate incidents, even when it's known on the front end it's not a hate crime. And so, again, just more of a commentary about commitment on behalf of the entire criminal justice system to take these cases seriously and investigate them to the fullest extent possible.
Thanks, Chief.
Thank you for coming out and giving us this presentation. You mentioned about the training part, for DAs and all that at the courts. Do you have that similar program available to houses of worship or any other places of education?
We don't. At this point, our outreach is limited to instances like this where we're requested to go speak through. I think that's how I was assigned to come here, was through the online. I think it's like a discussion form or you request a speaker. We don't have training programs set up per se for that. I mean, it's something I can definitely take back and relate to my boss if you think there's interest in that.
So I would think so, yeah. I mean, given all that keeps going on, we see what happened at the synagogues and at the mosque and other churches and all that.
Right, yeah. So, yeah. For now, the most part, our trainings are geared in-house. And we make sure as a commitment that every time a new deputy DA is hired, whether it's a hiring class of 10, hiring class of 1, they're getting our hate crime awareness training so they know what a hate crime is and how to properly handle it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
If I could just make a comment about that, although not to the same degree of expertise as the DA's office, but oftentimes local jurisdictions, sometimes police departments, and I can't speak for every city, but I know that on occasion our department has You know, we're in close contact with all of our faith-based facilities, and we would provide that kind of training if requested to our community partners.
And I would just add, Commissioner, that perhaps that's an excellent role for the commission to play, right? I mean, to your point later on about the forums, I mean, begin with the definition between a hate incident and a hate crime and what you do when you hear about it or witness it or are involved in some way or another as a victim of it. So that's a really prescient point you're making here that perhaps we might be able to take action on in combination with the DA's office and the local police departments and the sheriff department.
I just wanted to share that with the commission staff. We do go out and do hate crime awareness presentations in the community and also in faith-based organizations.
Anybody else?
Yes, just to apologize for being tardy. I went to the wrong location.
Oh, no.
I hate to be the angry old man that my parents or that my kids think I am, but it was a little frustrating, yes.
I'm sorry.
It's my fault. I should have looked at the agenda more closely.
Apologize. Counselor, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Really appreciate your time and, more importantly, your hard work in this division. And you should just know that one of our mandates as a commission, in fact, the main mandate, is to report hate crime and to educate the Orange County community about it. And so we're happy to partner with your specific department anytime to further get this message out there. And the district attorney knows us well, and we hope to develop a relationship with you. And who's your partner in that division?
Paul Chrysopoulos.
Paul, okay. Right. I met Paul. Please do not hesitate to call upon us for community outreach, for anything else that you might need. I think that is a perfect role for this commission to play. So thanks again very much.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Did you want to go back to item 3 since you have a quorum now?
No, because we're going to wait for Dr. Reynolds to be here. Thank you for asking, though.
Okay. All right. So item number 5, discussion of human relations forums.
Yes. Commissioner Faruqi.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Basically, last time when the commission convened, we talked about looking into having some kind of a forum or a conference, if you will. And then I had a follow-up meeting with Norma and her staff about a couple of weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, I do not know, to come up with some ideas and brainstorm so that we can present it to the commission. And thank you, Norma, for putting this together. So you have before you what we hope to engage to take our works more to the community and others as the commission. So the suggestion here is to have a forum throughout Orange County, and the way that would happen, the issue is should the commission lead a human relations forum series for Orange County? So that's the issue, and there's a background to it, and apparently this is not the first time that this has come about. It has been discussed in the past as well. So Norma helped me with it, and we put this thing in place. So you have that in front of you, unless you want to read through or just highlight the points. Basically, the issue is to have a series of maybe 4 series of panels discussion on certain topics that are more pressing among many. And we kind of shortlisted it, and the title of it, Humanizing Our Human Relations in Orange County. You know, there's a lot of good work being done by different organizations and law enforcement, and what we heard from the DA's office as well. But how many of us really kind of know that, and how do we take this in campuses and other places where we can have conversations, and through that something more meaningful comes out? So that's the background to this. So we have suggested having maybe 3 to 4 forums a year. Topics could be youth mental health and suicide, impact of hate in our communities, and we just heard that from the DA's office as well. Model policing, community collaboration with interfaith, and then homelessness, and that's a bigger topic, but more from a mental health and impact in terms of hate crimes. There could be different ways of measuring this. You know, kind of laid it out there, just ideas where we can engage with the academic institutions, with the universities and what have you, colleges, to get their help from different departments to maybe do a survey, a study, something that also helps the institution as well. And that would set up some kind of a guideline of what we are looking into and why do we want to do this. And that there could be some mini projects, workshops, things of that nature. So we just wanted to present this to the commission and see if this would be of interest. Any questions?
I think the topics you've highlighted, bulleted, are really very real and societally critical at this point. Probably mental health and suicide is even could even be broader, you know, not just youth, but yes. There are, you know, lots of groups that are at risk for this, veterans, homeless, et cetera. But I think these topics are very timely.
Thank you, Commissioner.
And I would echo that comment as well, and thank you for your work on this so far. I think that at least what I have seen is that there's a connection between mental health and homelessness that is impossible to ignore. And if you know, we can work to alleviate the one condition, we may find ourselves helping out the other as well.
Absolutely, yeah. No, you make a good point over there, and that's, you know, there's a lot of interconnectivity in these areas, and that translates in your behavior and what happens in society and the outcomes. So, absolutely, yeah.
I love this idea. A couple thoughts, and this is a hunch, although Don Hahn would back me up, that hate crime and hate incidents are terribly underreported, and the only way we're going to see action taken and very high levels and money dedicated to it is if the numbers are accurate and indicate what's happening. And I just feel like getting the word out there will open up the doors. I can just tell you in my work as a rabbi, I literally get two or three phone calls every week from parents or students who have suffered some kind of hate incident. And they don't know what to do with that information. Right, they don't know there's an anonymous link on our webpage, or they call the district attorney's office, or they could even call the police department, and all that information will be coalesced at one point or another. So just the PR standpoint of this is excellent. The only thing I would caution us, notwithstanding the comments of the commissioners here, is we have to be careful to sort of stay in our lane, too. There's a homelessness commission, there's a mental health commission, and they are all intersecting, to be sure. I think they intersect with criminal justice, which does fall under us, and hate, and conflict resolution, for sure. And certainly can be part of it, but I think we just have to, this proposal needs a little more nuancing, but I think we're 85% of the way there, and so I think I have the right to start an ad hoc committee from the chair, right, Norma?
Yep.
So, Commissioner Faruqi, would you like to chair the ad hoc committee?
I would.
Excellent.
If you want
excellent.
Me to.
Excellent. Anybody like to serve on the committee with the commissioner?
I'll serve on the committee, the ad hoc committee. If I can make one comment just to echo what Chair Steinberg said, I do think that maybe for the first one might suggest something that would be more logical, and maybe it is bullet point number two might suggest that might be an easier topic for us to tackle off the bat. And just thinking about recent hate crime incidents in our communities, and maybe it's just thinking out loud here, it's something where you've got representatives from the DA's office and local law enforcement and the ADL and, of course, Orange County Human Relations, and there could probably be some pretty good discussion and community education. Just yes. An idea.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think we want to take small bites. We don't want to take too many things.
Yeah. I'd like to, Janie, you would like to? Okay, great, perfect.
Okay.
Perfect, excellent. So.
Appreciate.
Did you have a comment? Excellent.
I usually do, don't I?
Yeah. Sorry, I just was preempting you. I don't know. I'd like to do a 5A It's not on our packet, but Golnez, I'd like to ask you to step forward if that's okay.
If it's related to the item 5, then yes.
Well, it's related to our other committee on the bylaws. I just wanted an update on the bylaws and with the timing of it, not the bylaws themselves.
I believe like I could probably, it would be better to wait for Ms. Renee Ramirez to come back. But it is my understanding that hopefully we can put that back on calendar next meeting so that we can discuss.
Let's do that. So thank you. Let's put the update on the bylaws process. And any outstanding issues about the bylaws, particularly the commission being able to make public statements after hate incidents about anything relevant to our mission. As Commissioner Reynolds pointed out in an email to me, have we made a statement about Poway? Have we made a statement about Sri Lanka? Have we made a statement about New Zealand, have we made a statement about any number of things that have happened that have been horrific that are absolutely number one in our bailiwick here? And this is no fault of Golnez, of course, she's just working hard. We are handcuffed right now, and we are working diligently to find a mechanism within the bylaws to allow the commission to make a statement that is not boilerplate, but yet is almost sort of pre-approved. And so I just want to say from a public position here, I think it is critical for us to address this issue because otherwise the commission is essentially neutered on the things that are most important to us. And I know Golnez appreciates that. I know Renee appreciates that. And I would like the Board of Supervisors also to appreciate that. And I think we're getting there. And I think the government wheels move slowly, but we're getting there. But, you know, we're literally in the heat of the moment here. And for the commission not really be able to make a public statement in a timely fashion, I mean, we still have yet to, I think, make a significant statement on Pittsburgh because we're still negotiating the draft of the agreement. So,
can we say something about the Holocaust yet? Or we?
Yeah, exactly. So, are there any feelings about this issue that I've raised here? Basically, I consensus. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd just like to reiterate what Rabbi Rick just said, and I know Rick and I have talked about this, and this is something that is central to our mission on this commission, and so we are constrained, and that's understandable because we are a government commission, but we have to have some flexibility to be able to react and respond in a timely fashion when these things happen, and unfortunately, we're seeing an increase in this around the globe, and I think it's important for us, you know, when these atrocities happen, and I use the word atrocities, they're not tragedies, these are atrocities, and when these atrocities take place, I think it is important for us to have the flexibility to respond and not just waiting until the next commission meeting, which could be 4 weeks, 4.5 weeks later. You know, I have confidence in our chair's ability to say things that are responsible and yet soothing and calming and yet expressing sympathy and outrage without necessarily having to have a meeting to discuss the exact terms of every single statement. In fact, I mean that's why we vote to have a chair, is that we have some level of confidence in his or her leadership.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So noted, and if the minutes could reflect that sentiment so that it's on the public record. Thank you.
Okay, next item, item 6, commission staff report, hate crime hearing, commission quarterly report, and update on commission ad hocs, projects, and endorsements.
Thank you. So I wanted to share with the commission that the DA's office reached out to us probably about 3 weeks ago in terms of a hate crime hearing that was going to happen in Fullerton. And it was an interesting case. I'm not sure if everybody's aware, but there was someone who had multiple crimes that were bias motivated, and they had always been held as misdemeanors, and there was another bias motivated incident or crime that he committed against an African American woman, and there was concerns that it was going to be handled as a misdemeanor. So the DA's office reached out to the commission, reached out to ADL and the NAACP just to kind of represent and support the victim, because the victim actually spoke at the hearing, which was so powerful to have her there and listen. And luckily, the judge went back and said that he felt that he needed a little bit more time, and that he understood from the support that he had seen and the victim's statement that he needed to reconsider his position. So I wanted to share that with the commission, that we were there. We were able to hear the statement, and it was interesting to see just the process in which that kind of takes place. We did speak to the victim and offered our support, and we also had the opportunity to connect with the NAACP for future collaboration.
What was the crime charged?
It hasn't yet. It's still, I believe that day it was a pretrial, and they're coming back. They weren't.
But a crime would have been charged for there to be a pretrial hearing.
Yes.
I think it was assault.
It was assault. So.
With a hate crime enhancement.
Yes, and I have the article, because the DA sent me an article, a link, where stated kind of the history and the incident, in which this man attacked the African American woman. So I can forward that to the commissioners. In your packet, I just wanted to kind of give you a heads up. Page 19, we submitted our third quarterly report to the county around our activities. So it's just a breakdown of what commission staff have been able to accomplish under our contract. So I wanted to share that's there for your pleasure, reading pleasure. And then at the end, I just wanted to make sure that we kind of keep our eyes opened and aware, you know, be aware of what's pending on our ad hocs and projects. At this point, there's one that I wanted to kind of come back to, because I don't think this was, commissioners were appointed to this, at least not to my knowledge, for the free speech versus hate speech. Okay, so I want to make note of that. I guess I'll have to connect with both of you to see how we move forward from that.
Sure.
So I'll reach out to you both after the meeting.
And we could set up a conference call to go over it. I know that I have notes from the previous, I want to say it was 2014 or 2015, that there was a policy that was written, and I had some notes on that we could go
over.
I think we might have even completed that step. The next step is to how do we get it out to all the clerks of the court and stuff? Because we had a conversation.
You're right. Okay.
Then
glad your memory is better than mine.
I'll have to follow up on. Okay. And I just added the community forums to this.
Awesome.
So that's it.
Commissioner Faruqi, do you think in the next month we could get a meeting so we could report back at the next commission meeting for the forums?
So. Yep.
Yeah. Ad hoc. Okay, great.
Thank you.
Item number 7 is update from OC Chiefs and Sheriff.
Just a quick update. So this past week I had the pleasure of meeting with Marine Dada Hoy, who of course was here last week, introduced herself as a new person running the police community relations program. And it was a great meeting. She was there with Joy Sanchez, and we just talked about me helping her get before the Orange County Chiefs, talk about her new role, and also remind Orange County law enforcement about the program and how it operates, how it runs, and how it can benefit law enforcement and benefit the community. towards resolving some of these lower level complaints that sometimes are received. So it was a good meeting. Just wanted to update.
Okay. Item number 8 is OCSD Interfaith Council update.
Great. So just to remind everybody, this is the Sheriff's Interfaith Advisory Council, and was started 3 or 4 years ago with the commission and the sheriff. And we meet quarterly, essentially, or 6 times a year. And the object is to gather faith leaders along with the sheriff. And if it's in a certain city in which the sheriff is not the agency, then we invite the chief of police to come as well. And we always have a speaker on a issue of concern to all of us. And given that May is Mental Health Awareness Month, we decided to have the people from CHOC's new inpatient mental health center come and do a presentation. Because we know for every dollar spent on youth mental health, it saves $7 of adult mental health in the criminal justice system and in other systems in our government. And we had about 50 people there, and it was in Yorba Linda. It was very powerful. Sheriff was terrific, and CHOC did a really nice job. Commissioner Farooqui, you were there. What was your impression of that?
No, I think it was very helpful. I connected with them afterwards as well, but looking at what the need is and the numbers that are there that are being underserved. Yeah, it's with only 18 beds or something like that, yeah, within this CHOC, and overall it's only 100 beds. Yeah, it's unbelievable, but it was good information. Thank you.
Excellent. And Norma, if you would just be sure that Gail has all the commissioners' email addresses, because I'd like you to all be invited to any and all of these interfaith councils, even if you don't come from a faith perspective. It is co-sponsored by the commission itself, so you are always invited to attend, and I think they're very, very interesting, and it's just great community connection of building relationships. And to me, Freedom, if we're going to do a forum, this is the group of people we're going to reach out to send to your network to come to a specific OC Human Relations Commission kind of thing.
I agree.
You know,
yes. Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you.
Okay. Next is any announcements from commissioners.
Janie, please.
In light of all the cultural awareness and, you know, understanding different cultures, there's a group called nonprofit group called GCS International, and for the last 17 years they've been hosting a visitation program out of Los Angeles and Orange County to Korea to foster a better relationship and understanding of the Korean culture. And since we have a huge presence here in Orange County and Los Angeles, so a lot of law enforcement from LA and Orange County have participated. City of Garden Grove, we always send our community-based policing captain as a way of showing, relating to the Korean community. And I know Irvine has a huge presence. And we've sent former council members. We've sent Orange County Sheriff's lieutenants down. And they also run a program for law enforcement, and specifically up in LA right now, but they're looking to branch out to Orange County area, working with law enforcement on dealing with Asian community and elderly and so forth. So they run a 8-hour training out of LA Sheriff and LAPD, teaching them about the Korean culture and the resources that's available in the Korean community. So they host an annual trip, and they take about 15 to 17 participants from various communities, social services, government entities, private sectors, people that are in governmental affairs, public affairs, and so forth. So I will email the announcement to Norma that she can send it out to all the commissioners who may, or you may want to recommend somebody to participate. And it's in October annually, and it's through Kyungyi University, which is one of the top universities. So we send about 15 to 17 people from LA and Orange County area. Usually Orange County presence is not as big as the LA presence, but we're trying to build our our presence in that program. So I'll go ahead and send that information out.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner?
Please.
A couple of things. One, at the outset, Rabbi Steinberg mentioned about Ramadan, and on that note, we have a lot of iftars, which is basically breaking bread or breaking the fast at dusk. And so on May 28th, which is, I think, a Tuesday, there is going to be an iftar dinner at the Islamic Society of Orange County, and all of the commissioners and staff are welcome. I did send it to Norma and Rabbi Steinberg, but the invitation is for all of us. It's an interfaith thing that we have, and Dr. Siddiqui, who's our director at that mosque in Garden Grove, it'll be at about 6:30 or 7 p.m., I believe, the starting point, and then we'll have a talk and prayers, and then we go for dinner. So please, you're all welcome to come. And the email is there. If you can forward that out, Norma, and get a count, that'll be great. A couple of more announcements that I have from my side. I always have something more to share. So I had just, there was a dedication of the post office in Orange. Congressman Lou Correa had this for one of the veterans in Afghanistan. So that was, I just attended this event, which was well done. A lot of people there, and things that we got to learn about our people in service who will give their life to keep us protected, and we appreciate that. The other item here that I have in front of me is a book. I just wanted to bring this to the attention because when there are displacements and wars and different things that go on, and the results of it is in different ways, and you have people that, families that are displaced and refugees and all that. So this book is about Beneath the Rubble. It's a non-profit or something of that, I think. And the lady is a writer. She's a consultant, but an author as well on Syria and the kids, the kids are impacted through this emotionally and otherwise and socially and the whole nine yards. So it's a pretty interesting thing. I think I did connect her as well. Right, Norma, did I connect you to Naushin Alu,
yes.
Think? Yeah. So if it makes sense, and she can give a talk over here because her books are now being recommended and used in the school districts, at different grade levels, including high school. So I found that kind of interesting, you're able to relate to people and what the issues are. And she's writing on other countries, not just Syria, anywhere that these kind of things happen.
Thank you so much. Anybody else?
Thanks,
Mr. Fareed. Reynolds.
I would just like to stress for the record, and I'm not trying to deflect blame for my tardiness here. It is my own fault for not looking more closely at the agenda. But I do believe that we will certainly invite a more robust public participation if there's a regular location for the meetings. So I just like to put the regularity of location and time, we'll get more public participation, I believe. So,
amen.
I wanted to just add that unfortunately the same date, May 28th, from 6 to 8, we're promoting a film that's the director's going to be at our School of Nursing. It's called Visions of Warriors. Mm-hmm. It's about veterans who experience mental illness and their interaction with healthcare, particularly nurse practitioners. I've only seen a little clip of it, but it looks very moving, and it's something that we're sending out to our campus mm-hmm. communities. But if you have suggestions on who else to send it, we're happy to do that. One other thing is that one of our faculty received a grant which enables, I don't know if I mentioned this before, to train nurse practitioners to be forensic nurses. Did I mention this earlier? Mm-hmm. It's all about sexual assault, and they're going to actually create a facility at UCI Medical Center so that the victims could go just to one place and get everything taken care of. And they're training 40 nurse practitioners over about 3 years.
Wow, so important. Well, Norma?
I want to add this came to my attention late in the game, so it was after the agenda packet was already sent. But for those who don't know, the Huntington Beach has a human relations task force. And the human relations task force launched a drawing and essay contest for the city of Huntington Beach and connected to the school district. And this is their end result. So they partner with a local high school and their newspaper, students that part of the newspaper or wrote a newspaper and put this together where you'll be able to see the different essays that the students wrote and then the artwork that they actually drew, and now they're distributing this throughout the city. So I thought it was amazing, the work that they did, and I wanted to bring it here because it's just an idea that maybe we can mull over and see if something like this can be broadened to a more of a Orange County level.
Wonderful. Anybody else? Anybody else? Well, thank you for being here, everybody. Meeting is adjourned.
All right, here it is.